Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Hey, it's a rainy Wednesday. At least it is here. Hopefully it is. The sun is shining wherever you are, or at least in your heart.
Oh my God.
I knew that would upset Rosemary.
Well,
bless your heart.
Good morning and welcome. It's a delight to have you here.
Rich is still dancing.
Yeah, Rich is dancing.
What was with that funky 70s Welcome Back Cotter kind of 1980s
Fat
stuff?
Music, yeah,
Fat Albert. I was digging it.
It's good stuff.
It is.
Good morning and welcome. Let me introduce our panel to you, then also remind you that you can join in on the conversation, panel@wamc.org. And we were just talking before of how much we enjoy your letters. panel@wamc.org. Rich Honan is with us. He joins us most and every Wednesday, and he is here. He is a corporate attorney and a lightning rod, and we love having him with us.
What is up?
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Rosemary Armeo counting down the days before her departure. It's a delight to have you with us this morning. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Hi.
Speaking of letters we love, we got one the other day that said, "Didn't we already say goodbye to Rosemary? When is she leaving? Sooner the better."
Nice.
So May
15th.
May 15th
I'll
is the last day.
I'll do the show that day and then get on a plane.
So we have a month from income tax time.
Yes, that's right.
My income taxes are all taken care of.
Okay, so three.
I never cheat on my taxes because they'll
get
you. Like to write about presidents who do.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for being here. And WAMC's Alan Chartok, our political observer, noted political scientist, and a great pleasure to have you, sir.
Yes, now that you mention political science, it really is a very sad day because our Ben Barber from the Berkshires, a superstar in political science, has died. Had passed on, and I feel very badly about it. I first met him when we were in the same political science department at Rutgers, and have known him for a lot of years. He's written on mayors. He's written groundbreaking work on the jihadist movement. He was a superstar, and it's really very sad. And then equally sad is Jillian Seidel who has put together theater companies and theater groups in Great Barrington and been a wonderful, wonderful inspirational leader in the arts community, has also passed due to a terrible automobile accident on Route 7 in Sheffield, in which she was hit by a car crossing the road. So it's not an easy morning for us here, and we just want to remember both of them.
Well, thank you very much. There is, I know we'll have more on all of that.
Sure. I know that Ian Pickus and our news team is working on that.
Yes, so we will tell you more. All right. Well, thank you all very much for being with us. Let us get started and talk about the news of the day. And as we tick down the moments till the 100 days, for whatever that is worth, it is time for us to talk about Michael Flynn. It's been a couple of weeks since we've mentioned his name. Michael Flynn may have broken law by not disclosing Russia dealings, according to lawmakers. Michael Flynn, President Trump's first national security advisor, may have violated federal law by not fully disclosing his business dealings with Russia when seeking a security clearance to work in the White House. That, according to top House oversight, lawmakers from both parties. The revelation came after Representative Jason Chaffetz, a Republican of Utah and chairman of the House Oversight Committee, and other lawmakers on the panel examined classified documents related to Mr. Flynn, including a form he filled out in January 2016 to receive his security clearance. The form is known as an SF-86, which is also a very good sunscreen, and is required by anyone in the government who handles classified information. As part of the review, Representative Elijah Cummings of Maryland, the committee's senior Democrat, said that Mr. Flynn did not disclose in those documents payments totaling more than $45,000 that he received from the Russian government for giving a speech in Moscow. The This all comes in turn as also the White House not helping out with this investigation in the sense of making any of those documents available. And so he was forced out as National Security Advisor, you remember, in February. And 10 weeks later, he continues to be a distraction for the White House. Alan.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, now we know why he asked.
That's what I would have said first, too. Now we know why he was asking for immunity.
Now we know why he was asking for immunity. I have a sense of this, but it's just a sense, that he maybe end up being the scapegoat for the entire Russian connection on the part of the president. And, you know, we know that all the president's men, or many of them anyway, had to do with Russia. And we know that it was fascinating, at least to me, that these guys who had those connections, and then the president who loved Putin and who loved the Russians and wanted to get along with them, and then his generals running the various departments, you know, they said, not so fast, they're still our enemies, which is interesting. It's one of those bifurcations between the president, what he's saying, and his people, what they're saying. Have they been told what to say? Are they doing it just because this is Trump's way of crawling out of the Russian connection? But I've said all along that if he's impeached, Trump, it's going to be over the Russians.
I have two interests following the news that's come out in the last couple of days. One is Flynn himself. What was he thinking? It is becoming increasingly clear that even when he was acting as an agent for Turkey, which he failed to disclose, and that's a problem.
And that's where the big money was.
The money was coming from Russia. It was coming from Russia Today, which is like the new Pravda of the Russian state.
Kremlin-based.
Yeah. So what was he thinking? I mean, was he truly a Russian agent? That's what it's beginning to look like. And how did he get to such a high position, not just in the Trump administration, but also in the Obama administration? He was ushered out of there.
The vetting
was not clear. And I think that's the problem with the paperwork. Did the new administration, and it was only in transition then, under Pence, who was a governor, did he even know about this document? It's very well known among people who have covered foreign affairs, but none of these people involved in the transition knew really as much as even Flynn did, and it was in his self-interest not to. So that's interesting. The other thing is, what is Jason Chaffetz doing in this again? He was the guy who was going to leave it all to the Intelligence Committee. Why is he on TV and all over the news talking about, yeah, we got to look at Flynn?
Well, he may want to rescue his reputation. That may be one thing, Rosemary.
Or he's setting up the scapegoat.
Yes, but I love the idea that he's referring to the Do-Nothing Investigatory Committee in the House of Representatives, which we already know has disgraced itself in terms of doing this thing. So, I can't really do this because an investigation, presumably robust, but nonsense.
It is impressive how no one is looking good right now. Not the congressional. Congressional investigators, definitely not the administration, which ought to just come out and say, look, you know, we did the wrong paperwork and you know, we got rid of the guy and we were right to do it. We wish it didn't happen. Just get it over with. Not Sean Spicer, who was trying to back up a really indefensible position by the White House. Nobody is looking good.
The position that Spicer seems to be taking, which is, I think, a common position within the White House, which is just to minimize that.
Yeah. We got rid of them a long time ago.
They really weren't part of the administration. They came forgetting the fact that they named him to this incredibly high office. Real quick, and then I want to get to Rich, but it is so April 19th, a letter from Mark Short, who is the White House Director of Legislative Affairs, said the administration was withholding documents because they are likely to contain classified, sensitive, or confidential information. Elijah Cummings said, in short, the White House has refused to provide this committee with a single piece of paper in response to our bipartisan request, and that is unacceptable.
And there are those people who think that that's impeachable in itself if they don't come up with the documents. That when they've requested those documents, you may all remember the tapes in leading to the Nixon resignation, which was certainly going to be an impeachment.
But according to Sean
Spicer, I don't think they have them. I don't think they're. I don't really think that they're holding them back. I think they don't have the paperwork.
Rich.
I don't know what paper. I mean, my understanding of the stories is, look, first of all, if you don't disclose, you're going to get dinged, right? I mean, that's,
absolutely.
You know.
I'm sorry, I'm hard of hearing. Are you going to get what?
If you don't disclose, then you don't disclose, you're going to get dinged, you know?
Dinged.
And then that's...
Dinged. I didn't know whether it was an illegal word or not. Okay.
Well, no. You know, there's different gradations in the law. If you get clipped or dinged, that's one thing. If you get hit, that's worse. And if you get whacked, then you're in bad shape.
Yeah.
That's 3 years of law school right
there.
Thanks,
Tony.
And 30 years of practicing.
So that's going to happen.
And you have to know, obviously, if you're a target, as he has made himself. And it doesn't, while it's unfair to judge somebody by how you know them publicly, it doesn't sound like the first time the guy might have, you know, kicked the ball out of the rough. So I don't know. So I don't. But if he didn't disclose it, you know, it's tough to defend. I assume, and I'm going way out on a limb, I assume that if there wasn't a disclosure, either he just lied, or what you usually hide behind something here is, you know, definitionally you say, well, you know, I didn't get it from the government. I got it from this entity, and then leave it up to somebody else to show the attenuation between the government and that entity. But I don't even know that. But I assume that's usually where it would be.
To Rosemary's point, which seems to me to be a good one, though, don't they have the perfect out, which is we got rid of the guy?
Yeah.
I think I think a more perfect out is, it sounds like the incomplete or wrong disclosures happened in January of 16 before anything. Now, I think that helps them more on the documentation issue if they said, look, you know, there's no documentation that went on during the few months or few weeks that he was with us that's relevant, that's not protected by national
Except
security.
Except that Flynn wasn't with him for a few weeks. He was an advisor at a top level all through the campaign. And then at the minute the election was over, so from November until when it was ousted, he had level to, you know, absolutely top flight information. That's why Yates was in the White House saying, hey, you got a compromised guy, get him away from this stuff. So the fact that he's doing that, and so the president went 7 weeks after Yates warns him about you got a mole maybe in your midst to doing anything, to even saying anything publicly about it to Pence. That's scary, and it's definitely a violation. Their method, if I were their communications director, would be to make it technical. That, look, you know, we weren't president. We don't have any experience. We neglected to do this. As soon as we realized there was a problem, we got rid of him.
Yeah, and I think that's what they'll say. And I think, you know, you can't tell from the face of the form. You can only tell from the form what the guy says, right? You know, if you're going to do the due diligence behind it, as this committee has, that's when you're going to find the inconsistencies.
And it's interesting they keep saying may have violated. In other words, Chaffetz, Cummings, they're all saying may have.
Well, and I think that's the legal issue that we're just talking about. If the government of Russia gave him money and he didn't report it, that sounds to me like a pretty open and shut case. And then I think they're going to argue about, first of all, did money go to me or to the organization for which I work? That's one thing, and whether they should have disclosed. And then the second thing is, just because it's a Russian entity, does that necessarily mean that it's from the Russian government?
Well, in Russia, it does.
You would think
You'd
so.
You'd have to argue that, though. Rich is right. That would be a defense they'll use. I don't know. The scapegoat issue is interesting to me because it seems to me that Flynn looks like he's deeper and deeper into it than we even thought.
I think so it's going to be Carter Page. I think Carter Page has scapegoat written all
idiot,
over him.
Isn't he? He deserves it. The little silly, smiling man.
And then the question, of course, is who turns? In other words, if they're not going to give him, immunity, and they're not going to let him off, and he turns around and says, oh, "Well, okay, screw you. I'm going to implicate you because you knew very well what was going on."
But unless he can implicate Trump, you know, or someone way up there, there's no value to that.
I refer you to Watergate, which I remember all too well.
Yeah, this is definitely on the same level.
But Dick Nixon,
this is a non-disclosure in a disclosure document.
No,
is right
no, no.
Up there
collaborating with the Russians is the issue. Don't you do the little lawyer trick of diminishing it?
Yeah, the little lawyer trick of the minute.
Here's the thing, though. Dick Nixon was absolutely involved in Watergate. He was a control freak, totally in on all the details. He was involved. It was easy to prove that connection. And when people like John Dean sang against him, it held.
Right.
Trump likes people. He liked Flynn. He liked the way Flynn liked him. It would be relatively, compared to Dick Nixon, it would be relatively easy to distance him from what Flynn did.
That's my opinion. We don't know the answer to that. We just don't know.
So meanwhile, the investigations go on.
What investigation? What, the one in the House, the feckless investigation in the House? We're already hearing leaks from the Senate, right? That investigation is a farce. Also, that they won't give them staff and they won't give them money to do the investigation.
Well, there is an FBI investigation.
Yes,
also.
I was going to get to
Well, are we sure? Are we sure that Mr. Comey, who clearly won this election, or at least in large part for Trump, is doing his best?
Well, no, we don't know that. I guess we'll have to wait until there's an election so that Comey starts speaking out to the public again.
That's very funny.
It's very true, unfortunately. Yeah.
Rich, anything on that?
I would have fired the guy.
Comey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that work? He has an appointment.
No, he can be fired.
He
President
can be fired.
Can fire him, yeah.
I know he can pressure him, but I didn't know he has a set term.
I would have fired him day one after the election. Like, not, I obviously can't do it after the election, but that would have been a day one thing. Saying
day one after inauguration.
Well, I just say, look, you know, I know you think you're doing your job, but there's just so much swirling around here that, you know, we need to start anew.
That's assuming, Rich, that you were operating at arm's length with the guy all along. What it doesn't assume, what we don't know, is what the relationship between what he knew, what the FBI director knew that may not be out there. And if I were Trump, I'd worry about that.
Yeah, I don't think he is.
Yeah.
Well, you don't think he did, but
I know. What? I don't think he is worried. But anyway,
who's worried?
I don't think Trump is worried about Comey.
Well, Comey did get himself up to the White House for a little conversation not that long ago with somebody. He was there for an hour, and we don't know who that somebody was.
I think it was you brought up the other day, Alan, about the Comey piece in the New York Times. Really interesting.
Yes, huge.
And so you sort of wonder where we go from here now over the— because this story doesn't go away. This just gets worse, right? I mean, it just starts to snowball.
Yeah.
It seems to me, anyway.
Well, Rosemary was absolutely right when she said before she pays her taxes on time because she wants to talk about presidents of the United States. I want to talk about directors of the FBI.
Yeah,
know what I mean?
Don't throw stones.
Can you
imagine?
Can you imagine if we did? Can you imagine if we did this with J. Edgar Hoover?
Right.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll pause and we will get some news. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many other stories to discuss. We welcome your letters as well. We love them, by the way. Panel at WAMC.org. Like filling music for Beretta or Barney Miller. I don't know which.
Beretta. Remember the parrot?
We all get our big platform shoes and just Kiana shirts.
I love platform shoes.
Those I
shoes.
Have? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I love those. I was tall for the first time. I can't do heels.
Will those be going overseas with you?
No. But when I go overseas, they're always saying, do you work in a hospital? Because I wear clogs, for example, which are only hospital worker shoes. And you don't know makeup? Oh, they just think I'm weird.
Not me. I think you're wonderful.
My niece had a job interview yesterday. And she came out and she said, I don't know whether I'm going to get it or not, but I have to tell you, the greatest thing about it is that you just have to wear scrubs. And she said, not to worry about, like, just basically be in slippers and scrubs all day. Seems like the greatest.
Could do
like
that.
All pajamas
but
all
not,
day long.
But not for the interview, though.
No, not for the interview. No. Proper for the interview. But if you got the job, you would wear scrubs.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Yeah,
You saw that Ivanka got booed in Germany.
Oh, yes.
I love that. What an arrogant thing for Trump to do. He could not care less about women's issues, so he sends a completely unqualified person there and exposes her to
that. I don't think any father would ever see their daughter as completely incompetent.
Oh, come on. He had to know what he was doing. His record on women is not good.
No,
and
but
she
he,
was not going to be
no,
asked about it.
But that isn't what Joe said. Joe said that people have blinders on when it comes to their own kids.
That she would cover him? Oh, I thought it was... you're right, but I think what he did was horrible
point,
and an insult to her and to women.
He even said at one point that if she wasn't his daughter, he would date her. Didn't he say something
yes,
like that?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He's disgusting.
Yeah.
Show one more proof of what a real champion of women he is. But man, she just personified a little daddy's girl in the worst way. She was totally out of her league. She's sitting there with the Chancellor of Germany and the head of the International Monetary Fund. She's a dress designer. Very pretty, I'll give you that. She has a lovely voice, and she's just so demure. But she is totally out of her league. It was disgusting.
But she now has a job in the White House.
Yes.
I mean, Let's not forget
Could you guys be saying this if Chelsea had a job?
Yes,
if Hillary
absolutely.
Had won and Chelsea had a job?
Well, totally. Chelsea worked for the foundation. She did not work for a public.
I'm saying if Chelsea had a job in the White House, you'd
completely
be saying
completely inappropriate.
Thing?
Yeah, well, something that does freak me out is the frequent mention now that Chelsea is going to be running for public office.
Yes.
I don't believe it. I won't vote for her. What's her qualification? She's rich. That's it. Rich and well connected.
She was
I don't
on the
want
Today
that.
Show.
Oh, those are
rich is
the
over
top
there.
Two or three of
I
the connect of the
requirements. And by the way, I did say the same thing about the Attorney General under Kennedy. That was also nepotism. That he was a lawyer, but he's less qualified than Jeff Sessions.
All right.
Oh, not true. Not at all. I know Bobby Kennedy had his issues, and believe me, I've always pointed them out.
Hey, what committee did he work on, Alan?
What
committee? He worked on the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Side
by side with Cohn.
Rich, I've been the first guy to say that again and again and again. And he wasn't nice to Eleanor Roosevelt and all the rest. And everybody's, well, he evolved, he changed, you know, all that kind of stuff. Okay, ready for letters?
Yeah, letters. Let's do letters.
There aren't many, but I'll read them, is. I always enjoy Rich. He gives me the opportunity to test my own beliefs. Haven't changed my mind on anything yet. Thanks. And that's from Peter. See? Isn't that nice? Okay. Rich writes to us. What does panel think it will take for an independent prosecutor to be appointed from Rich? Now, when it says, I love the construction of the sentence.
Yes.
What does panel think? It isn't what does
the
panel think.
Right.
I love it because it's when you're sitting in the doctor's office and the nurse comes out and says, doctor, not the doctor or not any doctor, but the universal doctor will see you now.
Right.
Get it?
Yes.
Okay. So what is for an independent prosecutor to be appointed is going to take going into the 20s for Trump. That's what it's
going
to take.
The
approval ratings. It's
going
into the 20s for Trump.
And
then he'll just say fake news, fake polls.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
Well, no. It's not him. It's not going to be him who makes this decision.
Other Republicans.
It's going to be the congressman, the guys who hate his guts sitting in the Congress, the Bushian Republicans who are finally going to grow something, and they're going to be able to say, we have to have an investigation. Happened in Watergate.
Yeah, and I think that's the model I would do. I think my answer would be it wouldn't be based on public opinion for an independent prosecutor to be named, you have to have some substantive direct allegations of wrongdoing by the president.
That's right.
You know, I think if anything ever reached that level with some degree of verification, then I think you'd see it.
I thought we don't have an independent prosecutor legislation anymore.
We don't.
So right now, Sessions recused himself on the Russia study, so it's his number two guy who was just approved this week.
Yeah, but no, we're talking – but I think the sense of the question is the true independent okay. prosecutor where, you know, somebody outside of the government.
Yeah, we don't have legislation that allows that anymore this far.
No,
so, I think that expired.
It's done by – but it's done by executive order.
Okay. Those well-written executive orders holding up so
well
let's
get
in court.
To those.
And a very respectable WAMCer, dear panel, we cannot know how this new tax plan will affect President Trump personally.
Right.
So
yes, we do. He's going to save a lot of money on taxes.
So I suggest
that doesn't pay it anyway. You can't save if you're paying nothing.
That's true.
So I suggest that the Democrats refuse to consider this legislation until he releases his taxes.
Well, that's terribly mature. But keep going.
No, that's it.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I know.
That's the letter.
No, I'm saying that's a mature response. Let's hold up tax policy for the entire United States because you're miffed that about something the president has done personally.
No. I think the fact.
And by the way, I'm not pointing at the writer of the letter because I know they're espousing something that Democratic senators have said. I'm not taking shots at the writer. I'm saying I think that. That is an abrogation of the senator's duty.
Abrogation, nice word.
Lawyer word.
I'm going to give you kudos for that.
Okay.
Lawyer word. All right.
Next.
But I just wanted to say that every once in a while, when somebody writes a letter like this and reminds us why it's so important, that's important. I think it's a good letter. Michael says. Flynn passed vetting by Trump, yet everyone knew Flynn took money and didn't report it. Who was in charge of Trump's vetting, Barney Fife? Or did Trump not care about what Flynn did? hire him anyway. I'm king. Well, you know, I take some exception to the letter, except that, like, everybody knew. Not everybody knew. I didn't know. But, you know, not everybody knew. On the other hand, the arrogance factor here does figure into this very strongly. You know, the whole idea that I can do anything I want, I'm king. When Trump became the president of the United States, I think people were scared out of their wits in a way that they are not as, I'm going to get letters on this, as scared now. Because I really thought we were on a direct line to fascism. And I think we might have been there if he had gotten his way, but he didn't get his way. Courageous federal judges in some obscure island in the Pacific, Hawaii, or in San Francisco, left-wing San Francisco, spoke up and said, no, you're not going to get away with this. This isn't. And all of a sudden, it stopped. The Congress turns around and says, nonsense on the health care bill because too many people would have been affected, and on, right? No?
Wow, yeah, that was wide-ranging. I just want to answer the writer's question. It was Mike Pence in charge of the vetting. Did a great job, Mike. Good job.
All right. So that was from Michael, and we thank you, Michael, for this good letter. Okay, and now we are going to go to Jim. I completely agree with Alan and Rosemary. They want to make Flynn the fall guy. Unfortunately, there is too much smoke coming from other corners as well. With current poll numbers indicating that nearly 75% of the country favors an independent investigation of the Russian affair, how long can they avoid appointing a special prosecutor? Well, I've seen some real examples of chutzpah, folks, including the not allowing a perfectly certified Obama appointee to the Supreme Court to even get a hearing. That was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yeah. Let's talk about the...
Wait, I'm not done yet,
okay.
Mister.
You done fulminating?
I'm not done yet, mister. I think chutzpah is the key issue in all of this. And he thought he'd get away with it. He didn't. And it's not going to get an independent prosecutor because they don't have to.
I was going to say, can we use that as a segue to talk about, you're talking about the judges, the Obama-appointed judges. Can we talk about the...
The
Sanctuary City Order?
Good idea. One more letter.
We have one more letter, okay. And then we're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about that.
Panel, parenthesis, I don't get this. Joe via Google. Double check this, but I'm fairly sure the FBI Inspector General during Obama administration has been left in the job primarily to review, investigate the actions of Director Comey and other members of the Bureau, perhaps including Giuliani's chums in the New York office through 2016. And that's Sean from Kerhoxen. I know nothing.
I know nothing either, but we'll see. I think he's saying we should Google it, and yeah. He could too. Excellent. Let's take a break. We will be right back and continue. We will talk about the sanctuary cities and other topics. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Just a quick programming note. We want to inform you that our wonderful engineering team is doing some work on our main WAMC tower, which is high at the top of Mount Greylock, and they're going to be switching out some equipment, which means they have to go on low power so that the wonderful engineering team doesn't get zapped.
The tower climbers,
right?
Yeah.
I just picture Ian like hanging on for dear life to the side of a tower with one hand with a wrench in the other, you know, just slamming. While Sarah is like reading directions to him, the green wire. Ian.
Our Ian is up there almost every other day.
Thank you for thinking that we have to go to our news division prior to our engineering.
Hey, he's a Renaissance guy. He can do it all.
Oh, that's
he
true.
Can.
That
he's
is
smart.
True. Anyway, so we'll if you don't hear us as loudly or as in a few minutes, it'll take care of itself, and you can check online. We'll be giving updates throughout.
And can you just turn up the volume and then you hear it?
Yeah, you can.
No, it
no,
depends where you are.
Because it's such a big signal, and if you go from high power to low power where you would normally hear us, perhaps you won't, or it'll be very staticky.
It's science.
Or you can look for an alternative. For example, in the Berkshires, you can always go to 105.1. Uh-huh. In Kingston, you can go to 90.9.
But it won't help if we talk louder.
Yes, it will.
Okay. And also, if you listen...
Our top story tonight.
If you listen online... Yes, right. Thank you.
Online.
If you listen online or on the app, that wouldn't...
You couldn't be right, Joe.
Okay. Excellent. All right. I promised you we would get to the... So just keep that in mind and... Hopefully you'll hear and limit the calls to the front office. Okay, so sanctuary cities. Trump blasts the federal court ruling that blocks his sanctuary city order. A federal judge in San Francisco dealt the Trump administration another legal blow Tuesday, temporarily halting President Trump's threat to withhold unspecified federal funding from cities and towns that refuse to cooperate with immigration authorities. U.S. District Judge William Orrick imposed a nationwide injunction against Trump's January 25th executive order on what are called sanctuary jurisdictions and said lawsuits by Santa Clara County and San Francisco challenging the order were likely to succeed. Orrick pointed to the discrepancies in the administration's interpretation of the executive order, which broadly authorized the attorney general to withhold grant money from jurisdictions that do not cooperate with immigration officials on deportations and other enforcement actions. And Donald Trump tweeted just a few moments ago, "See you in the Supreme Court."
Right. And by that time, you know, as Mario Cuomo used to say, a new pope will be born. I mean, it's going to take a while to get there. But I was going to ask Rich that very question. Rich, you're a scholar of some note on legal affairs. Considering, let's say that this order skips all the intermediate appeals and goes to the Supreme Court, what would happen?
Trump loses? On this order?
Yeah.
From the way this order is drafted, and I want to defer to Rosemary because she and I were actually talking
about this. We actually agree on
this. But if what they're trying to do, and I haven't read the entire order, and I read most mm-hmm. of the decision, but if what they're trying to do is use this order as a blanket withholding of a kind of new restrictions being placed upon funds, I think that's going to be difficult. But,
right. Rich and I were talking about this before. This is a very badly drafted, put together order. We saw it twice now with Muslim bans. You can get draconian measures through if you craft them, if you consider the possibilities of how they can be attacked and shore them up. And the Trump administration has a complete failure so far to do this. Not only that, they've sabotaged themselves by speaking out memos like that, speaking on O'Reilly factor. He has said the very things that prove the judge's case on why they have allowed the stay. That's really just inexplicable.
Yeah.
And the measure, this is so vague a measure, aside from the idea of is it a new measure
set of restrictions.
Yeah.
Remembering that this involves taking the money away from the localities.
Yeah.
If we don't like what you're doing,
so we're going to take away your money. Is that even in the rules so far? It could be. It could be. Rich has a loophole for it, but they've not argued that. And then there's this other thing. There is no legal definition of a sanctuary city. So the mayor of Providence, Rhode Island, was on television last night. It was really interesting. And he goes, look, okay, so we go to the Justice Department and say, what do we need to do? What is a sanctuary city? And Sessions Peoples tells them you have to cooperate with the Department of Justice in immigration matters. And the mayor points out that they do. Every city already does this, even in a sanctuary city. If there is a serious criminal who is an illegal immigrant with a serious criminal matter, they do cooperate. Therefore, they all meet the definition. It is an order that cannot be put into effect.
Well, I want to ask Rich another question on this. If you're Gorsuch, right? And this president is tweeting, basically, I got this guy in my pocket now. I got a majority on that court. Wouldn't this be an ideal opportunity to say nonsense?
No, I don't think he needs to, that Gorsuch needs to go to that level. I think the way the order is, I said before off air to Rosemary, I don't think Scalia upholds this order. Just
right.
Because,
right.
Because I think it's for what they're trying to do. The other thing, Alan, is it's really unfair because I've had this done to me. It's really unfair to grade a lawyer's performance based on what you see publicly because you don't know what the client said, you don't know what their restraints were. But it seems like the Justice Department has either on purpose or just by incompetence has been awful And all of these orders, all these executive orders that have gone to court, they're terribly drafted. The briefing seems to be awful, and the oral argument actually gets mentioned by the judge, where the Justice Department lawyers say something so stupid and so undermining of their case, it gets mentioned in the opinion. So in this one, one of the Justice Department lawyers said, well, you know, we're really just using this executive order as a bully pulpit. If I was the judge, I'd say, what are you doing in my courtroom?
Yeah.
There's one other issue that Rich and I also talked about, which is that this is the third order now that's gone up to the district court, the federal district court that's in San Francisco. And we have already seen Sessions and Trump both kind of target criticism at federal judges who really, truly are just doing their jobs.
So now we have a Mexican judge, we have a Hawaiian judge, we have a, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I'll take a step back, though. It's almost like they're not trying, I got to tell you, it's almost like they're not trying real hard to get any of this actually done.
Yeah, you may be right.
That's interesting.
And it's almost like they say, look, we want the credit for, the Muslim ban or we want the credit for fighting sanctuary cities. But it doesn't look to me like they're really putting the right kind of resources into truly getting it done. I will say, I'm sure if your friend Kellyanne Conway was sitting here.
Somebody said they want her on the panel. Okay. Wrote us a letter today. Hey, so get her on the panel.
You get her on the panel, I'll come back. Mm-hmm.
Do you find her strangely attractive too? Like
is that
Alan?
The only way you'll come back?
You wouldn't need me then because she's conservative and smarter than me.
Rosemary never forgets anything.
Okay, yeah. All right.
But I think if she were here, if the administration were here, they'd say, "Listen, put."
By the way, that was a compliment. Rich.
Thanks. put the sanctuary city orders aside. Look at the immigration orders. Mm-hmm. What they would say is 40% less. 40% less illegal immigration across the southern border in the first month, and then 30%, and down overall 70%, if you can believe the numbers. And at this point, I don't think any of us believe any numbers that the news media prints anywhere.
It's not from the news media, Rich. It's from immigration.
Okay.
They reported it, and despite what you hear on talk radio to the right, this story has been widely reported, including the New York Times and CNN.
No, that
illegal crossing of that
seems
border
to be
way down.
Yeah.
As well, it should be. Are you going to come in with the rhetoric and the?
Well, and so they might.
So does it work?
There's
an argument.
You know, does it work with whom? It may well work with the base.
It's working to stop illegal immigration.
No, I get that part.
Okay.
I get that part. But I'm also saying and agreeing with you guys that the rhetoric in itself becomes important to Trump, not the result, because it goes to the people he has to keep happy.
So the proof of that, if this is true, and this is just a theory, will be if the so-called sanctuary cities, and I agree with you, it's a fluid, non-technical term, if the sanctuary cities start cooperating a little bit more, so like when ICE calls and says, if you pick up this person, please hold them. Okay, rather than the city
go out and get this person.
Yeah, which I don't think they're really asking that. I think they're saying just please hold them. Maybe they won't ask for the warrant anymore. Maybe they'll just say, yeah, we'll do it. And then, they might say, we don't care what the Ninth Circuit says because we're getting done what we want to get done. Right. I don't know that it's that well thought out. Okay, I'm not.
But it is having that effect. I hear what you're saying. And talk radio on the right is saying we, the liberals, are not giving Trump credit for having achieved a lot without even putting in his ban, which is
or his wall.
Illegal or the wall.
Yeah. He doesn't need the wall.
Talk of the wall has cut illegal crossings by 70%. Yeah. That's kind of interesting.
I had read a statistic.
Have to give credit.
I had read a statistic that I can't stand behind. Jonah's magic machine may check it. But there was a point at which we were hearing.
Don't screw with it. Yes, go ahead.
There was a point at which we were hearing that more people were going the other way than coming this way.
That's been true for the last few years. There's been out migration to Mexico. But this measurement, and it's kept monthly. By the way, that little dig about don't trust anything from the newspaper. If you're looking at numbers,
on both sides.
Believe the media. Do not believe this administration, which has consistently lied, starting with day one and how many came to the inauguration. But anyway. The immigration has always kept these figures on the number of crossings, and it is it's way down.
You
it's
did read the political piece on Iran, right?
I did.
Okay, thank you.
So, so William writes us and says, regarding Rosemary's comments on Ivanka Trump's qualifications for office.
I didn't realize we were on the air when we were talking about that, by the way. I looked up and said, oh, my God, I've been talking to the radio about that. But, yeah, it's not really, I want to not
I'm
take
not
credit.
Done.
I know, but I just have to say that it wasn't original. I'm, like, quoting friends that I've talked to about
well,
it.
Well, this
said,
is original from William
it?
From Selkirk.
Okay.
Who says, regarding Rosemary's comments on Ivanka Trump's qualification for office, all I can be said is, like father, like daughter.
All right. We're
she learned from the best.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more letters and more topics. But first, news from Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. I think when we last left you, we were getting ready to read another letter. So we're going to do that, and then we're going to move on to some other topics. And we got all kinds of cool stuff going on today. All right.
Okay. Hello, esteemed panel. The EP. He calls us EP, capital EP.
Esteemed. Oh, that's good.
You've moved on a bit from Flynn, but I'm curious about a comment Rosemary A. made. She expressed her opinion, and I'm beginning to share, that the White House doesn't have the paperwork for Flynn. Is she now of the view that they didn't bother to vet him at all, or that they knew of his disqualifications but ignored them and encouraged him to lie on the paperwork?
Oh.
Who checks what people are receiving or in the presence of classified, even top-secret information, have the appropriate authorization?
No, I don't think it's anything that calculated. I think Trump organically just liked Flynn. They bonded. They worked together closely during the campaign, and then he brought him on board. I don't think he ever looked into what the paperwork was. Now, Flynn knew because he's been in government before, but I don't think Trump and you know, by delegation, Pence ever paid attention to it. That's what I sincerely think. And now it's embarrassing because how do you explain that?
Heather says, "Is in going through the previous batch of letters, Rich made a disparaging remark about Democrats' ongoing attempts to make Trump's tax returns public. Did you? I don't remember that.
I'm sure I did.
Yeah, well, you probably
sounds like me.
I want to know, Rich, do you truly think there is no reason to see these returns? Is there truly no evidence that our current president may have conflicts of interest? Is there nothing that warrants seeing this information? Very curious to hear your reply. Thanks, and that's from Heather."
I have to answer no, I do not think there is no reason to see the returns. I put more clearly, yeah, I think there's a reason to see the returns. And I think that at the appropriate time, he should release them. Personally, I told you before, if I were the IRS, I would say audit's over. Now you have no more excuses. Release the returns. That's what
I'm
doing.
It's not. He's the president of the United States now. And the rules are he will be constantly in audit for the next 4 years unless he's
impeached. Or Rich could be right. And they could have said, that audit is over.
Yeah.
The IRS, unlike the...
To answer her question, I understand the interest in it. To me, it's not one of the top 25 issues of the day. But I'm not saying there's no circumstances under which we should see the returns. But by the way, is he going to benefit from tax reform? I hope so. I hope I do. I hope we all do. Absolutely.
Okay. Rich, was it an abrogation of the Senate responsibility when McConnell refused to give a hearing to Obama's Supreme Court appointee?
I think you could argue that.
That it was.
You could argue that.
Wow, that's a lawyer answer, too.
No, well, it's
were you
also,
letting him get away with that? Would you have argued that?
No, I would have said... I would have probably either personally I would have said let the guy come up and we'll vote him down because there's something that just nags it at as freedom loving Americans there's something about not even having the hearing.
It's just wrong.
But I will say when you're talking about I'll use another legislative ledger germane when you're talking about
sleight of hand
McConnell's going to go down in history on that one, right? I mean,
changed everything,
right? I mean, like a year, and especially when he was doing this a year ago, when nobody thought the Republicans were going to win the White House. So, yeah, the answer to her question is yeah, I agree.
Susie says Flynn was Rebecca Mercer's pick for the position, one of two she succeeded in getting in. The other is Sessions, says Susie.
Who's Rebecca Mercer?
She's Robert Mercer's daughter and the major donor of the dark side, and they like Trump.
Okay.
Gentle persons. Are there any of these investigations looking into Trump's accusations of phone tapping? That outrage should not be swept under the rug.
Yeah, it's not. Didn't you hear Susan Rice's testimony on that?
That's been completely debunked, that whole attack on Susan Rice. Please don't bring her up again.
Oh, come on. What do you mean? What's been debunked about it?
Odin. She spelled it phonetically, and I probably murdered that, too. Okay. And then I disagree with Rick.
What?
Surprise.
I'm shocked.
Democrats aren't miffed. We are concerned, capital letters concerned, about Trump's conflicts of interest, and tax reform is all about exactly that, conflicts of interest. Rich, do you hear that?
I do hear that. So you think that was the scheme, was to get himself elected president to lower his taxes? That was the deal the whole time through?
No, but now that he's in there, he sees the opportunity and he's taking it.
I have no idea what this guy is all about. To this moment, I have some basic assumptions. Assumption one, he needs to have a little bit more popularity because of his narcissistic egotism. I truly believe that. I think he needs to have some. And so he's desperately searching for the right combination. But I have no idea why a guy who lost the popular vote would feel that he has to be so draconian on all of these positions. I don't get that.
I don't know that he's been that draconian on all his positions. I mean, the wall, for example, you know, the wall was his big thing, and now he's backing off on that in order to avoid the shutdown.
Well,
I think he's being less ideological than other people have been.
George W. Bush came in like gangbusters too, and he also had, as you recall, a disputed election and lost the popular vote. And he came in and he actually did legislation and executive orders, the fewer of them that were effective.
But he had something that Trump so far has been either unable or unwilling.
Sanity,
well, I was
going to
say
what?
A professional team. He had a professional team around. Remember, you know, Bush. You know, he reached into the Bush 41 bag of tricks and had those people, and he got stuff done. Then he got upended, you know, by September 11th, and that became the mantra.
Joshua says, seriously, Rich, you think that Trump administration isn't really trying to enact their agenda? Occam's razor. And here's the quote. Among competing hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected.
Yeah, and the assumption I made is that they want to get their agenda across, and what Rosemary and I were saying is their agenda's working pretty well from a results standpoint.
Mm-hmm. The most likely explanation for their failures is that they are incompetent. Obviously, they're trying to enact these policies to please their base, but there is no, capital N-O, advantage to them trying and failing.
Except for the results. Yeah, quod erat demonstratum.
Well, you can say that. I can say...
Just saying. If he's going to talk, I'll talk Latin back.
As you said, because of the base. All right. Allison says, regardless of what the law says, the message is clear to the world. Wall or no wall, ban or no ban, you are not wanted here if you are black or brown. And even if you are a rich Saudi oil baron, you will be harassed by law enforcement because you look Muslim. Bottom line, the individual cop is emboldened by the message from the White House. Nobody wants to come here on vacation anymore. That's not true.
Yeah, it is. Actually, tourism is way down in the
United
States.
Excuse me. I was at the theater district the other night. You couldn't take a step one way or the other.
Anecdotal evidence is not real evidence, Alan.
For example, do you know they made a play out of Groundhog Day?
Oh, yes. That's good. I love that movie.
I heard the play is actually not great, but the guy in the play is terrific.
Andy Carl.
I got stuck with the New York Times one day on an airplane. Or it might have been the Journal. Journal might have said it. Anyway.
Okay, nobody
Groundhog
wants to
Day.
Go here.
Completely irrelevant.
Travel is down. Smart kids will go to engineering school in other countries. MIT will not be able to attract them. Nonsense. Of course, MIT will. Okay, Peg says, what about the idea that there are fewer immigrants coming across the border because of fewer jobs being offered to them? The employers are the bad guys. No reaction to that.
Okay. I don't have any empirical evidence on that one.
And by the way, about the anecdotal thing that you just said,
yeah, basic research 101. Yeah, what
about it? My PhD advisor, Elena Padilla, used to say, Shartok, for example, stinks. Okay, hi, panel. Very interesting discussion. I think a special prosecutor like Ken Starr is not what we need. everything in secret, and no control over what he investigates. A Senate Select Committee dedicated to a focus on wrongdoing by the Trump administration with subpoena power. Public hearings is what we need to have the people accept the ultimate result, whatever that is. Thanks. So sorry to see Rosemary leave. A contribution to the conversation is so valuable. And that's also
very nice.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard from Megan, who said, "Hi, panel. Why is it there's so much attention and so many words spent about illegal immigration, and yet as a country, we don't talk about sensible gun control? I understand Second Amendment rights, but nobody goes hunting with an AK-47. I mean, if you compare the amount of violence Americans have done to each other versus what illegal immigrant prince have done it correctly." See that? They think I'm not reading it right, but it says illegal immigrant prince.
It's
well,
true.
What would have that been that it was corrected, automatically corrected?
I don't know. Spell check has destroyed the meaning of that sentence.
I've done it, absolutely. It makes no sense to make the illegal immigrants the focus, and that's for Megan.
The Prairie Home Companion, you know, the new one without Garrison Keillor,
yes.
The first really funny bit I heard this week, which was it was a whole play enacted with a script that had been spell checked. It was hilarious.
Oh,
it was
great.
Just hilarious.
That's great. Yeah. Okay, and here's the last one that I have from Joshua.
I do think we still talk about gun control, though, in this country.
I do all the time.
I don't know if we have in the new administration.
No, but every time I think...
And I'm happy we haven't. I don't want to bring it up because that'll remind him that he has to put out an executive order. We had one already saying people with mental disease, I didn't say crazy people, notice, can buy guns. That was important that we fix that.
Go ahead, do the last one.
As Joshua writes, as someone who opposes a large federal government and believes in states' rights, why can't a state decide to take immigrants in at their own will without the Fed stopping them? Whether it's Silicon Valley or the Saratoga racetrack, shouldn't it be that be the Republican position? Failure is part of letting states experiment. Have a great day, Josh.
Except the Constitution reserves it to. Yeah,
well,
to,
no,
to
but you
Congress.
Know, there's such hypocrisy here.
And actually, the president.
There's such hypocrisy here. States' rights, states' rights, states' rights, states' rights. Oh, forget states' rights.
Yeah, but you can't. If 49 states, if the federal government wanted to impose an immigration restriction and one state didn't, it would undermine the entire system.
I get what you're saying, Rich, but I'm also saying there is real base rank hypocrisy. When Republicans have always been for states' rights until they don't like states' rights for one obvious reason.
No, Republicans weren't for states' rights during the Civil War when they were fighting against it, while you guys, the Democrats, were using it as an excuse for slavery.
Excuse me, Rich.
Don't we have to go to break? Well,
excuse me, Rich.
No.
It's a long time since the Civil War.
Hey, I still...
And it's a different Republican and Democratic Party now.
I'm still having people tell me that, you know, my personal success is based on, you know, the results of slavery. So don't tell me it's a long time since the Civil War, because I'm still hearing that from people.
Wait. I'm so sorry.
Isn't that an accepted school of thought?
I don't get that. What do you mean? Maybe I'm dumb, but what do you mean?
Rosemary, you know what I'm saying.
He's saying that white people, people of European descent, have prospered in this country above what they might have because we benefited from an economy built on slave labor, and there's a certain amount of truth in that.
But it's a well-known school of thought.
That's crazy. It's an argument that's frequently made. But that doesn't justify saying Democrats thought this and Republicans thought that. The parties don't have continuity over the centuries. It just is not the same.
Well
party.
Said, Rosemary.
They don't. They just don't.
I just wanted to mention, because we were talking about executive orders, but one of the president's executive orders that was signed yesterday looked to help the U.S. agriculture business by establishing a task force to identify impediments to the business's growth. And the U.S., the new Secretary of Agriculture, started this week. And just a programming note, tomorrow on our program, during the panel, we will have the former Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, with us.
Well, that's great.
So he'll be joining us.
Will he be in the room with us?
He'll be in the room with us.
Wow. I like these panels where we turn into like kind of a mini press conference.
Well, what's happening, Rosemary, is we're obviously preparing for the day that you know, Peter Tucci is not at the piano anymore.
Right.
And you had, no, you don't get that?
I
don't.
Do. Okay, that's sorry. Ancient. The end of the ancient, Peter your example
at the,
sucks.
At the end of the Peter Duchin story, or the Duchin story, there were four hands on the piano. And then as they close out, there are only two hands on the piano. Don't you get it? Don't you see?
Oh, okay. Wow. That's really obscure. I even knew who Peter Duchin was, and I didn't get that.
Well...
Well, he'll be
basically,
here.
Basically,
I'm lost.
You have, so, the you have the rotation, and we're trying out new people. So, you know, maybe Tom Vilsack will be taking your place.
Yeah. Cool. Does he live near
but
here?
I think what Joe is doing and doing brilliantly is anybody of great note who is around who will make a contribution to this. And we're getting a lot of mail saying that they love Malcolm Nance on the program. And
Judy Enk. And,
Judy Enk. Yeah. And so we'll do that on a basis. And then once a week you'll be calling us from wherever you are.
Cool.
To tell us what your thoughts on things are.
Cool. That'd be great.
Rosemary segment.
That's right. Tom Vilsack is an alum of Albany Law School, so he's coming back to his alma mater. So we'll welcome him tomorrow.
Too bad you didn't get John Roberts when he was in town. That he would have been fun to have in here.
I tried.
Oh, did you?
I tried. Mm. Yeah, they don't those Supreme Court justices don't like to talk.
Yeah.
Scalia did.
Well, not only that, but Justice Douglas, when we used to bring our classes down to Washington, I used to bring them from New Paltz, he'd always see us.
Wow.
And when Roselle brought her high school class down, he talked to them. And when I raised my hand, I said, why are you doing this? He said, we should be doing this.
That's awesome. Great. Yeah, that's true.
All right. Let's go to North Korea real quick and talk about the...
No, and I'm not going.
Let's go to the subject of North Korea real quick. As North Korea conducted live fire drills Tuesday in South Korea, Japan, and the United States carried out their own military exercises, the White House said there is still room for a diplomatic resolution. There will be a major meeting taking place at the Capitol today with all 100 senators, and they will be briefed on this issue.
I just wanted to say something real quick.
Yes.
They have said, now the White House has been saying, Sean Spicer, everybody else has been saying over and over again. Now remember that it was McConnell's idea to invite us over, to invite the Senate over to the White House to get this briefing, which I always, having been around for a few years, think of as, oh, really? And nobody called McConnell and said to McConnell, why don't you invite them over there? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Is this a publicity thing?
Well, it seems that way.
I mean, I've never heard of this.
I just don't understand why you do it. Because ultimately, it's because they have to sort of make a new area, and they're going to be like in a tent. I don't know.
No, they're going to be in the executive office building, I believe, in their little
the old executive office building.
Yeah.
Right. So I just don't understand quite what you gain from that, I guess.
Yeah, I don't either.
But it's got a guessing game going, which is he going to drop something on them? And does he have to get the Senate on his side to explain why it's so important we do it now? That's the kind of thing people are thinking. And that's without a G, because
plus,
I'm a
logistically, wouldn't it be easier if he just went over to their place? I mean, they're already there, right?
You know? So I guess, I don't know. And it just adds to the questions? I don't know.
You know, you read those, if you ever read, you know, Gore Vidal's Lincoln or any of those, it talks about, you know, just Lincoln and Seward just getting up and walking from the White House over to the, you know, to the House of Representatives, you know, and you know, calling and saying, call all the Republicans. We're going to have a meeting right now.
Right.
You know, get like, you know, Speaker Colfax and everybody.
Yeah. But George Washington went up there very early in his administration and they kept him waiting. He said, I'm never doing this again.
I'll forward promote one of our guests, but David McCullough, who will be on at 11:30 this morning.
Wow.
That's very cool, by the way.
He's the best.
I love this guy so much.
Anyway, we've had him on any number of times.
He's so sweet.
Get him on the panel.
Anyway, I'd love to. In his book, in Truman, he talked about that of going back and forth, too. That would be a regular thing. He would go walk around all the Senate and congressional offices and check in. And
he got out and walked every morning.
Yes.
Truman did, and then he got shot.
It was
at Blair House.
Blair House, right.
At the vice president's house. And Blair, by the way, was in Lincoln's cabinet. That's where that house came from. But
really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about those days, just to talk about the collegiality that is now not present, when Truman got the phone call to come to the White House, right? He was actually having a drink with some he was in one of the senator's offices, just having a drink after work with a couple other senators, Democrats and Republicans. And then they got the call saying, you need to come to the White House right now.
And McCullough in the Truman book talks about basically talks about his shoes hitting that marble pavement
that
and making that run.
That's
amazing.
He forgets his hat and walks out. And he's so flushed, and then he goes back and gets his hat. And then
that's a very memorable.
That's a great
part
scene.
Great, incredible. Yeah. We're out of time.
Oh no! I have a few things to say about Harry. Yeah, forget it. Next time.
All right, we'll take care of North Korea next week.
Okay,
it'll still be there.
Well. Are you
that's
sure
why,
of that?
That's why I said it.
Cute.
Knock on wood.
Cute.
Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan, thank you all very much for being with us. And we will continue our roundtable program after this.